Bienvenidos and welcome to the Jacobin Sports Show. I'm your host, Matthew Miranda, and hard as it is to believe, I am actually here recording a pod. It has been an absolute nightmare of a month for a whole host of reasons. I don't want to bore you with all of them, but I do feel like you should understand, yo, where have you been? Particularly those of you who are kind enough to donate to our Patreon. So there's been an assortment of nightmares, and here is what it has been. I won't spend too long on this, but I do feel like you should know what the hell's going on. So first of all, in I think the middle of January, I recorded an episode. It was the first time that I recorded an episode all by myself and felt really good. Like, I was really, really happy with how the episode went. And when I finished, I had just switched to a new platform to record with, because the sound engineer I worked with told me, you got to use StreamYard. StreamYard is great. It's so much better. Use StreamYard. So I did. And when I was done with the recording, there was no volume. Absolutely no content was present. It showed that there had been a recording made. It showed that the recording had gone on for an hour, but there was absolutely zero content. And I was just crushed, because I'm not proud of that fact, but it's the truth. I had felt so good about how things went, and then all of a sudden, it didn't work at all. Nobody could tell me why. I felt like a jackass. It's like, why did I switch to something new when I had something that worked before? So that was stupid. Then the next time I tried to record, I pulled out the microphone and found that apparently a mouse or something must have crawled into my house, into my desk, and chewed on the wires or something, because the wiring for where the mic goes into where the cord went to the mic was completely like ruined and destroyed in a way that didn't make any sense to me. So that was weird. And then that meant I had to buy a new microphone. I'm not going to lie to you people. I am a part-time adjunct professor and a freelance writer and podcaster. I am not as rich as you might think I am, hearing those job descriptions. So a lot of other things going on in life. I did not have money for a microphone. It had to wait. So it did wait. Then I got the new microphone, and for about a week and a half, I could not get the new microphone to work at all. I had to literally make an appointment with my engineer, who had just gotten laid off from the company where I knew him. So first I had to find him, and then I had to pay him, because now he's freelancing. The point of all this being, I think we're good now. I'm not totally sure yet, because before I started recording right now, I did about 8 different sample recordings just to make sure that this is actually seems to be working. The first recording, there was no volume. The next 4 recordings, there was not even a chance to play them. It would pop up as an MP3, but you couldn't, if you hit the play button, nothing would happen. The last 4 attempts I made, 3 of them have worked. So I feel like I'm on a winning streak, and I'm just going to ride it. I honestly have no idea at the end of this recording if it will still have worked. If it didn't, give my love to my family, because I'm going to jump out of this fucking window if it doesn't record this time. So let's see what happens. I miss you all very much. I miss the pod very much. There has been obviously a ton of things going on in the world of sports and society. There will be guests again soon. I'm talking with a few people about making some appearances in March. This episode is just yours truly. And there's about, I don't know, maybe 7 different stories I want to touch on. So thanks for being here. I hope you're still here. I hope you still stick with the show. I don't anticipate the microphone drama continuing, but I've been trying to update on the Patreon when I've had news to share. So if you are a subscriber and you have been like, what the hell is going on? Always go to the Patreon and check it, patreon.com/JacobinSportsShow. I also posted a couple notifications on the Twitter for the JSS, which is @JacobinSports. So that's all the back drama. Let's get into things that are a bit more exciting to talk about. The first subject I'm going to get into today, as many of you know listening to the show, I am a mild fan of the New York Knicks. The New York Knicks play at Madison Square Garden. Madison Square Garden is not only an arena, there's also the television network, MSG, and their streaming app is MSG+. They're owned by James Dolan, who, if you were going to send an emblematic human into space as a representative of the species, is hopefully not the one that you would send. James Dolan and MSG announced today a new streaming service. This has been an enormous kind of question in the world of sports as we've headed into more digital and streaming rights, and as more and more people cut the cords and more, especially younger generation fans, don't seem to be as hardcore about sports as their predecessors. So all the sports leagues have been trying to figure out, how are we going to monetize like this market? How are we going to keep track of our relentless slaking for profit when the public is clearly showing us we're not as interested as we used to be? So MSG Network today announced that they are going to be streaming. They're one of the first companies to do this. A few others have done it too, but they're the first really big one to do it. So MSG announced that they have the broadcast rights to the New York Knicks, the New York Rangers, the New York Islanders, the New Jersey Devils, and the Buffalo Sabres. And MSG announced that they are launching a streaming service through their MSG Plus, where you will be able to either stream a game for $10, an individual game is $10, a monthly subscription is $30, and the yearly subscription is, wait, I think I have that backwards, I'm sorry, one second. The monthly subscription is, good Christ, this is terrible error, I'm very sorry. I have somehow totally misplaced my numbers. It's basically about $30 a month, and I think about $300 a year. I know you save $50, so let's do the math. It's $30 a month, and it's $310 for the year. This is only currently going to be available in markets where the MSG network is already part of cable. It is designed to obviously be pulling in people who live in markets where the Knicks and the Rangers and all these other teams are on cable, and it's meant to pull in people who maybe have cut cable because of the expense of having the whole platform, but just still want to follow their teams. It's kind of gross. I'll admit, full disclosure, it's probably a better deal for me, with an asterisk that I'll get into. I am single. I get paid to cover the Knicks by two different websites. So I'm directly financially invested in being able to watch the Knicks. Where I live, I don't have MSG Network available on the TV that I get. I live in a house that has satellite. MSG is not on satellite. I can get MSG through Fubo. Fubo is $80 a month. So for me, if I can get Knick games for $30 a month instead of $80, that would seem like a great deal. But there's a couple issues there. Issue one, and this has certainly not been touched on in any of the press releases, all breathlessly excited about where this is taking us, MSG Plus is infamous for the absolute shittiness of the quality of its stream. I've tried to use it myself. I have completely given up. MSG Plus is garbage. The fact that you are now going to be offering to charge people more for your garbage is not really a great offer. The reception today has not been tremendously excited by the fan base. A lot of people, I think, rightfully feel like, screw you. How much money have we paid you? This doesn't really help anyone. And in my case, even though the money would work out, there's the issue of quality. But let's say you are a person who has a family. Like, I don't have cable. I don't pay for cable. I pay for Fubo, but that's it. If I live in Manhattan, Long Island, even upstate here in Rochester, MSG Network is part of the cable package. So I have a family, let's say, and I'm paying like whatever it is that I'm paying for cable. This product doesn't appeal to me at all. It would just be money on top of what I'm already paying. This is exclusively an attempt to get people who have already cut cable to recommit to some sort of financial willingness to continue following the product. I don't think that population really exists out there. Nobody's excited to pay $10 a game, particularly, again, when the streaming service, you haven't figured it out. This would be like offering you know, something great on cable, but the picture's always pixelating. Like, it's not exciting if you can't deliver what you're saying. And this seems very typical to me of a lot of what goes on in the world today. Like, some massive company is very excited to tell you how they're going to change your world and the world with this new product, and they haven't even covered the most basic element of it, which is nobody can actually see the games reliably. There's always problems with the service. So, just wanted to give you that MSG story. Just to let you know that probably this will happen more and more in sports. There have been other teams. I'm trying to remember now if it was, there was another NBA team that charged much more than that per game. They were charging, it was either the Clippers, I think, or Portland. Somebody was charging like $30 a game to watch it on TV. They are going to do this. There's an enormous tension because with cable cutting really the premier property left on television and cable networks is sports. Sports media packages are always selling, always, for more and more and more money. And it's enormously significant because a lot of the leagues tie salary and payroll, and the sports that have salary caps, they tie that into the revenue. So they're always, in their capitalist logic, there is just an assumption that they have a God-given birthright to endless profit and larger media deals. And eventually, probably sooner than later, that's going to stop because more and more people are leaving cable. And even the ones who are stuck behind, a lot of customers don't like paying the enormous extra fee. When you have ESPN, when you have certain sports networks, you're paying more for that channel as part of your package than pretty much any other channel, other than obviously like specific paid services like HBO or Stars or things like that. When you have sports channels on a cable package, you, even if you don't watch the sports, you're paying more for those channels than anything else. And a lot of people don't like that. And a lot of people are pulling their patronage from cable. So the leagues are scrambling. They're trying to figure out, how are we going to keep this going? How are we going to monetize this? This is obviously the simplest first approach, which is, hey, we'll charge you per game. I don't know how well that's going to last. And it will be interesting to me to see how the public potentially responds the way that the teams and the leagues have. So, for example, if you know about the New York Knicks, the Knicks years ago started a tiered pricing system. I think Golden State was the first team to do it, where instead of charging one ticket price based strictly on seats, they began to adjust the price depending on the opponent. So if you wanted to see LeBron James, I remember about 5 years ago, I wanted to take my daughter to see a basketball game. And I looked at when Cleveland was coming to New York and Golden State, because I wanted her to see a good game. Forget it. The nosebleeds were like $300. And that was 5 or 6 years ago. I don't know what they are now. If you want to see your team play, who sucks? The Detroit Pistons. Fine. It's not really going to be expensive. Will fans respond in the same way? And will that lead then the leagues to adjust, or the teams to adjust their ticket pricing? You can say, we're going to charge you $10 per game. A lot of people might sign up, relatively speaking, to see the Knicks play the Celtics or Golden State or, you know, Milwaukee, some big, big name team with a big star. But then when the Knicks are playing the new Nets or Orlando or Houston, who are like some of the worst teams in the league, you're going to lose that audience. And I don't actually believe that the leagues are ever going to confront the reality that they don't have a God-given right to just keep making profit. I really believe climate chaos will kill us all before sports leagues figure out you might have to do with less. Another story, and I promise they will not all be it won't all be sad or dark today, but I think it's an important story. Candace Buckner is a wonderful sports columnist for the Washington Post. She had a piece that came out today about what's happened at the University of Alabama's basketball team, particularly their head coach, Nate Oates, and their star player named Brandon Miller. If you weren't aware, there was a shooting death of a woman named Jamia Jonae Harris. And it's a little complicated if you don't know the story. There's another player on the team along with Brandon Miller named Darius Miles. Darius Miles is charged with shooting and killing Harris, young woman. She's in her early 20s. She was a mother. That doesn't matter. I'm just giving you details. Miles is accused of shooting her in the face. Brandon Miller, the star player on the team, could be charged with transporting the gun because there is evidence that Miller was asked to bring a gun and leave it somewhere for Miles to get the weapon. And after Miller did that, Miles took the weapon and shot Jamia Jonae Harris and killed her. I don't know if there's a consensus on whether Miller knew what Miles had planned, but there is no disputing that Miller provided the weapon that Miles used to kill this young woman. That's all bad enough. Like, just that? Wow, what a fucked up story. But of course, money, sports, power, lack of accountability, it gets worse. So, Brandon Miller, because he is an absolute star of a college athlete, has endorsement deals. One of his endorsement deals is apparently with Dodge, the car company. Miller drives, or drove, I don't know if he still does, he drove a Dodge Charger. This is all in Buckner's article in the Post. And that was the car that was used to transport the gun that Miles is accused of using to kill Harris. After all that, after Brandon Miller gets in his Dodge Charger with a gun, drops it off to Miles, the murder happens, there's all this public uproar, you would think, after all that, that Brandon Miller would be like, oh man, this is pretty messed up, I should probably, you know, reflect on life, I should lie low, I should... No, no, no. Brandon Miller, after the killing, advertises to his Instagram followers the Dodge Charger that he used to transport the gun. You might think to yourself, okay, that seems really stupid. It seems really foolish. This is a young kid. I mean, he's a college student. He's a freshman. I don't know what you were like as a freshman. I was a weirdo. Maybe you think, all right, the kid, he doesn't know better. Entirely possible. So where are the authority figures who are helping in this case? Well, here they are. The head coach, oh, I'm sorry, when Miller, at the end of Miller's, just so you know that there's no, he didn't accidentally walk into this ad. At the end of the ad that he did for the Dodge Charger, he literally signed off by saying, tell them B. Mills sent you. So we have that. So maybe you look to the head coach and say, hey, what does Coach Oates have to say about this? He's an adult. His brain is fully formed. What does he have to say? Well, Oates has not been an ambassador for maturity in this story himself. When he was first asked about it as a press conference, his response about Miller's involvement was, quote, wrong spot at the wrong time. He apologized for that after people pointed out what a dick he was for saying it and how he was severely minimizing the murder of a young woman by saying wrong spot at the wrong time. Alabama, after all this broke, played a game at Missouri. You might be surprised to learn that Brandon Miller continues to play, but he's a great player, and Alabama is in it business to make money. So he continues to play. No, hasn't missed a game, hasn't had his role reduced, wasn't given like a break to get his life and shit together. They just keep throwing him out there. So the game at Missouri, naturally, there were people in the crowd who heckled him. Oates' response was, quote, sometimes college students don't understand the severity of things, which is an astonishingly myopic thing for a grown-ass man to say, who continues to demonstrate his inability to understand the severity of things. The story picked up more heat in the last week when Miller apparently has a pregame ritual with teammates where when he's introduced as one of the starters, he spreads his arms out and a teammate like pats him down like you're doing a weapons check on somebody, like you're patting them down to see if they have a gun. This was brought up to Coach Oates. Coach Oates said that he took responsibility for it. I don't know what that means. I find often when someone says, I take full responsibility, it means they take none. He tried to explain it that this was a joke about TSA checks. No, not buying that. I don't think anyone's buying it. Miller played an excellent game against South Carolina. After the game, Oates is asked about Miller's performance. Miller hit the game-winning shot, had a good game for an athlete if they're not potentially involved in a murder trial. And Coach Oates, again, burying his head in the sand, talks about how this is a safe haven for the players. It lets them focus on what really matters to them. It lets them get, quote, outside stuff out of their mind. You may remember in 2008, I think it was, when Kobe Bryant was facing rape charges in Colorado, there was a lot of media just salivating and celebrating how great Kobe was playing while the trial was going on. And everyone was just talking and talking about his ability to focus and just be on the court, and it's a refuge for him. He was charged with rape. He admitted he was not convicted. But if you read Kobe's, he made a statement to his accuser, maybe as part of a plea deal, I don't remember why, but he made a statement to his accuser and said basically, like, I didn't understand, but I see it now, like what you saw, what you experienced. But it was all about Kobe and his great mental strength, and Brandon Miller's getting the same thing now here. You're calling, Buckner points this out in her article, she says, only referring to the coach, only a man who can't dislodge his loafer from his mouth would equate transporting a murder weapon and allegedly witnessing the death of a woman to outside stuff. Coach Oates was a man who was brought into Alabama and could not shut up about accountability, accountability. I'm going to bring accountability because I love you. And here, and he even said, it's in the article, quote, if all I do is teach you how to throw a ball through a ring, I'm wasting a lot of time. We have to develop character in our guys. I firmly believe this. The better young men you have, the better basketball team you're going to have. And meanwhile, Brandon Miller keeps playing. These children's mother is cold in the ground. And the millionaire head coach has got no problem with any of it. I'm upset with Brandon Miller. I'm mostly upset with the coach, because as somebody who works at a university, as someone who knows very well the potential immaturities and mentality and challenges that come with being a 17, 18-year-old in college, finding yourself, learning about the world, Brandon Miller is learning fucked up things at Alabama. Brandon Miller is learning fucked up wrong things from his head coach. And you know what's going to happen? Oates is going to be gone in a couple of years as a millionaire. He's going to get millions to coach somewhere else and pull the same shit. This woman's still going to be dead. Darius Miles will probably go to prison. Brandon Miller will become a millionaire. And what has he learned? He's learned, keep selling that. Keep doing your ads. Keep doing your intros. No one can touch you. Your life is more important than the woman who was shot in the face. That's what he's learning. Good job, Alabama. Good job, NCAA. The same organization that used to strip people of their eligibility if they got a free pizza. But we have this going on. Okay. A positive note, I think. A very different story. In the NBA, Damian Lillard, who has been for years the incredible guard out in Portland for the Trailblazers. Damian Lillard last week scored 71 points in a game, which is crazy. It's one of the highest scoring games in NBA history. I actually did some research after the game, found that Damian Lillard is the first player since turnovers were recorded who scored 70 or more in a game and had two or fewer turnovers, which basically translates to the man had the ball in his hands the whole game. Everybody knew that he was trying to score points. Everybody was cued in on stopping him, and they couldn't stop him, and they couldn't even take the ball away from him. Incredible performance. Additionally incredible, I think, because Lillard has become a bit of a, what's that word people use? when something becomes like a flashpoint. Litters become a flashpoint in the debate about, I think, really player autonomy and a right to define their own lives and their own careers. There has been a long, gross consensus among most sports media and certainly among a lot of fans that the players' main obligation is to try to win a title, especially in the NBA. If you're any good in the NBA and your team can't win a title, you are expected to demand that you be sent somewhere where you can win it. The reason for this, I think, is very simple. I think ever since the early 1990s, when ESPN arrived as like the dominant force in sports talk, before that it was your local newspaper, talk radio, conversations at the bar. But once ESPN became the dominant disseminator of sports talk, necessarily the conversation had to thin and basically dumb down, because you can't live in St. Louis and be an expert about a hockey team in Hartford. Like, that's just not going to happen. Everyone's an expert about their team in their market. Everyone is very up to date on their team, on who they spend time watching. But there's literally 29, depending on the sport, 29 to 31 other teams that you don't have time to watch. So necessarily, ESPN, for example, you see it all the time. You see it with their Stephen A. Smith. You see it in the past with people like Skip Bayless. They can't possibly be in talk intelligently about everything. So what you do is you simplify the content, and that way you're able to speak about it. So instead of like in the 80s, just as an example, Don Mattingly in the 1980s is a beloved New York Yankee, great player. If he hadn't gotten hurt, he would have been in the Hall of Fame. Don Mattingly never won a title. As a great Yankee, that makes him pretty much in a company of one. He never won anything. That did not remotely affect the affection that the fan base had for him as a player. But when your audience grows from the local market to 250, 300, 330 million people around the country, how many more around the world, you have to simplify things or you're going to look like a jackass. So the emphasis becomes rings, 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 champions, champions. That's why Tom Brady is now unquestionably better than Joe Montana, because he has more rings. That's the argument. He has more rings. Why is Michael Jordan better than LeBron James? He has more rings. That's what it comes down to. Damian Lillard is an anomaly in the NBA in that he has played most of his career for a team that has absolutely no chance to win a title. If you haven't been to the Pacific Northwest, like, he's in Oregon, which is a little different. Washington State is the most beautiful place I have ever seen in my life. I visited there years ago, about 7 years ago. Washington State is stunning. Oregon is beautiful too. Damian Lillard is married. He has children. It's possible he likes where he lives. It's possible earning $60 million a year in a place where you're happy, in a place where your family is settled, and in a place where you are adored as a local hero and an icon. That's pretty good. Maybe Damian Lillard is happy. And maybe there's something there that other people could pay attention to, because for the fans, I think it's even more important for fans than for players. Like, you're allowed to root for your team because you like them. You're allowed to root for them because they're your team. Everything is not championship or bust. If it honestly was, most sports teams would have no fans. How many teams not only don't win every year, but don't even contend? So Damian Lillard is out there in the PNW, putting up his 70-something points. He is revered. He seems happy. And honestly, it makes me happy as a fan just seeing it. It's just nice to see, hey, this guy's good. This guy's enjoying himself. He clearly isn't living his life for other people. Good for you, Damian Lillard. That makes me very excited. A couple stories that make me less excited. Kyrie Irving, you may have heard, was traded from the Brooklyn Nets to the Dallas Mavericks a couple weeks ago at the NBA's trade deadline. What's interesting about the Kyrie story for me is this. You may be familiar with Irving when he was still in Brooklyn during the COVID pandemic. Kyrie Irving did not play a lot of games. He couldn't play games in New York because he wouldn't be vaccinated. And at the time, there was a rule for especially public performers, athletes, actors and actresses, musicians, if you were going to perform in an arena setting, like you had to be vaccinated, and Kyrie would not get vaccinated. Which, fine, like, whatever you think of that, whatever. But then, because Kyrie is Kyrie, and everything has to become part of a larger heroic narrative with him at the center of it, Irving declared that he was refusing to get the shot as a conscious decision to stand in solidarity with all of the other workers who had lost their jobs because they refused to get vaccinated, or who were not being allowed back to work because they refused to be vaccinated. This stance lasted until literally the day that Eric Adams and the city announced that they were passing like a special now exemption so people like Irving could go back to work. And you know what happened? Irving went right back to work. He went right back to... Now, he wasn't getting paid. All those games he was missing because of his ethical stance, he wasn't getting paid. As soon as the city announced, yeah, you can come back, he came back. All the people that he was boycotting with, all the people that he was standing in solidarity with, they still couldn't work. Kyrie was not worried. He went back. He got his money. He did his thing. What makes this particularly interesting now, to me, is that Kyrie Irving was traded to a team in Dallas, in the state of Texas, which has absolutely stringent abortion laws. If you're a woman, if you're a person who can conceive and deliver a child in the state of Texas, you are treated as a subhuman. Kyrie Irving was Mr. Bodily Autonomy when he was in Brooklyn, and it was about a shot that he didn't want to get. He has no problem being sent to a state where at least half the population does not enjoy the bodily autonomy that he does. And the reason this is happening is because, I'll spare you all the contractual jargon, but Kyrie Irving this summer is looking to get paid about $50 million a year for the next 4 years. He's due for a new contract. He has to be on a team when this season, like after the trade deadline, which was last month, I'm sorry, 2 weeks ago, like the team that Kyrie finishes this season with has an advantage in paying him money next year. It's called bird rights. Basically, the team that Kyrie Irving is on, there's a salary cap in the NBA. There's an amount that teams can't go over, but there's some flexibility with it. And if you have bird rights, which Dallas does now with Kyrie, you can be over the cap and still re-sign a player if you have their bird rights. You can go over the cap and sign them. Kyrie was desperate to get out of Brooklyn, despite the fact that they had gone on a monstrous winning tear at the end of his time there. The last 20 games he played with Kevin Durant, I think they won 18 of them. But Brooklyn was not committed to paying him $199 million for 4 years because they have seen that he's not reliable. So he was desperate. He announced he wanted a trade. Nobody knew what his reaction would be if he didn't get it, but everyone knew Kyrie wants to be traded somewhere where they will actually pay him. There's not a lot of teams that have enough money to pay him this summer, and most of the ones who do are lousy teams or they play in markets that he wouldn't want to go to. There's basically two places he can go to and get his money. One is Dallas, and one is the Lakers in Los Angeles. He got his deal to Dallas. Does he care about anyone there? Does he care about the bodily autonomy? I would say to you, a lot of people seem to find Kyrie Irving hard to follow or hard to understand. I don't think he is. In this one sense, if you follow his career choices, it's always about how he can get the most money for himself. I'm not necessarily against that. Good for him. He's getting money from billionaires who don't need it. He does do a lot of positive things with his money also, a lot of which goes off the radar. He's done wonderful things for groups of people, for individuals. But please don't hold yourself up as man of the people. And now you are again showing that bodily autonomy, that was a phase. I'm not really into that. For what it's worth, the Mavericks have played 5 games since acquiring Irving, and they have lost 4 of them. So, whatever. A story that I'm curious what you listening might think of this. I would love to hear from you at our email or our Twitter or anywhere. I don't know how to feel about this. Jeff McNeil is a baseball player. He plays for the New York Mets. I promise every story in this episode will not be about a New York athlete. Jeff McNeil is 30 years old, and he just signed a 4-year deal for $50 million. I'm sorry, he's 33, not 30. 33-year-old, he just signed a 4-year deal for $50 million. That sounds great. And he's very happy. He's very grateful. He said it was interesting. He pointed out, he said, quote, coming to the major leagues at 26 and being a free agent at 33, you never know what's going to happen. I'm an uptight person as well. So I think this kind of allows me to go out there and play baseball every day. I don't have to worry. It is unusual for a baseball player to come up as old as McNeil was when he came. 26 is unusually old for a player to get into the major leagues. By extension, 33 is a late age to be signing like your first big deal. So on the one hand, I'm happy for Jeff McNeil. He has money. He doesn't have to worry. I don't think he did before anyway, but like $50 million is a lot less reason to worry. He can set up his family. He can set up future generations. Like, and again, he's getting the money from a billionaire. So good for Jeff McNeil. But the thing that throws me is, as a socialist, especially a socialist Mets fan, Jeff McNeil is being exploited by his employer. Jeff McNeil is an excellent baseball player. Jeff McNeil, I don't want to give you his whole resume, but Jeff McNeil, I think he won the batting title last year. And he's been one of the best hitters in baseball in multiple seasons. He plays a lot of different positions. He's a gamer. He's very, very not a video gamer. Like he loves to play baseball. He plays every day. Very easy guy to root for. The issue with Jeff McNeil is, why is it that he has to wait until this age? He's 33 years old, and this is where he's finally getting the opportunity. It's very, very strange. So the question with McNeil is, like, as a fan, am I happy because a human being got paid more of a portion of what he deserves? Am I bothered because he's still being exploited a lot? I mean, he's making $12.5 million a year. He could easily be making double that. The reason he's not is because he's 33, and this is the first time he's had an opportunity. And baseball players go through arbitration-eligible years before they get a shot at their first big contract. So if McNeil had come up earlier, he would have made this money. He came up at 26. A lot of players come up, let's say, around 21. If McNeil comes up at 21, he's signing this deal when he's 28. And then a few years later, he gets to sign probably a 9-figure contract. I don't know how to feel about this, because part of me then feels like a billionaire just paid a millionaire. What do I care either way? This doesn't make the world better. It doesn't make the world worse. Well, it doesn't make the world better. I don't know how to feel about that. I wonder what you think. From a labor perspective, from a humanity perspective, billionaires exploiting millionaires, is that a problem or no? I don't really know. 2 more stories and then we'll be done for the day. Back to the world of sports owners doing questionable moral things. It came out a few weeks ago that the Utah Jazz have been paying homeless people to clean their arena after games. I don't even know where to start with this one. I'll read you some information that I found online. homelessness is a massive, I don't remember where this is from. I'm sorry. It's not my, it's from Yardbarker, yardbarker.com, which is like a sports site. Quote, homelessness is a massive problem in most U.S. states right now, and Utah is no different. The Gardner Policy Institute says that 76% of Utahns, apparently people in Utah are called Utahns. I did not know this. U-T-A-H-N-S. That has got to be the worst name for a people anywhere. Really, take 5 minutes and think of something better. Utahite is better. Utarians, I don't know. What the hell's Utahns? Anyway, the Gardner Policy Institute says that 76% of Utahns, I can't say it, people from Utah, are priced out of home ownership, with Wendy Garvin, executive director of Unsheltered Utah, saying that there are more homeless families than there are shelters to support them. This is the statement that kills me. The Jazz have found a novel way to combat the situation by paying homeless people to perform labor after games, including paying them to pick up trash at the arenas. The Utah Jazz are a multi-billion dollar organization who play in one of the NBA's most advanced arenas. Their owner, I feel like his name is Ryan Smith. It's like a really plain name. Sorry, let me refresh it. Yeah, Ryan Smith. Ryan Smith is the owner of the Utah Jazz. Ryan Smith. I did this with one of my classes the other day. We figured out Ryan Smith, if you take the percentage, the reported percentage of the population in Utah that's in Salt Lake City, that's homeless. And Ryan Smith gave every individual who was homeless like $10,000, maybe even $100,000. I can't remember. I don't need the specifics. You get it. The billionaire owner could single-handedly wipe out homelessness in Salt Lake City if he wanted to. And he would still be not only materially wealthy afterwards, he would be a hero. The man would never have to spend money on a meal, on a drink, on anything. His family wouldn't. He would be a god in that state if he did that. Except he wouldn't be, because then those people would get away with something, because obviously if they're homeless, they must have done something wrong. That's what a lot of people feel about homeless people. I can't read this story and just not, there's footage of, you can see footage literally of the camera panning over the arena, and there's all these homeless people picking up trash. I know this is a podcast, and so by definition, I'm supposed to be saying something about something. I don't know what else to say about this. I think the story really speaks for itself. If I have to elaborate on why this is a nightmare of a story, then you're lost. A team is getting, and the thing is, they're getting praised for this. The billion-dollar inanimate franchise is being praised for paying homeless people, I'm going to guess, minimum wage. I'm not sure. I'm sure they're not paying them a living wage. And they're being celebrated for it. I don't know. I don't know, man. I don't know what to make of that. Last story, which also, today's episode should be called I Don't Know, because I don't know with half of these stories. Last, I just want to, maybe in honor of the dearly departed Jonah Birch, he's not dead, he just isn't doing the show anymore. When Tom Brady announced a few weeks ago that he was retiring, I felt oddly badly for him. And we talked a few times about Tom Brady on the show. I think he's a more interesting figure than sometimes people think. We had a guest on once who made the argument that Tom Brady is basically like a socialist hero. Tom Brady is an interesting dude, or rather, let me say, I don't think Tom Brady is at all an interesting dude. I think Tom Brady's story is an interesting story. And one reason why I found myself not being able to help feeling badly for him when he announced his retirement was this whole last year of his life has seemed like a terrible Faustian bargain. Like, Tom Brady a year ago retires. I don't care that he was married to a supermodel. Like, he was. Gisele Bündchen was his wife. They have two children together, and also he raises a son from a prior relationship with the actress Bridget Moynihan. But a year ago, Tom Brady retires. He has done everything you can do and more in his profession. Like, I don't know if Tom Brady's better than Joe Montana, because I'm not sure how you compare players from wildly different eras. But there's no question that Tom Brady is the most accomplished quarterback in terms of statistics and in terms of success. Like, not only does he have all the rings more than anybody else, but he's also set like all these records, in part because he plays in a time when it's different. It's easier to set records. And in almost every sport right now, offense is at an unprecedented high because that's what tends to sell. Hardcore sports fans are going to watch the games no matter what. The leagues know we have that money banked. It's like when the MCU puts out a film. They know. I'm one of them. The nerds are going to go. I keep hearing Ant-Man sucks. You know what? I'm going to go see it tomorrow. You know why? Because I'm that much of a hardcore nerd for Marvel Comics and the MCU. So the leagues know, okay, the hardcores, they're going to be there. But if we want to get casual fans to stick around or to become attracted, casual fans want to watch three-pointers. They don't want to watch post-ups and free throws. Hardcore fans want to watch 6-5 hockey games. They don't want to watch 1-0 that takes 3 overtimes. Casual fans, they want to see touchdowns. So in the NFL, the rules have changed completely in the favor of the offense. So Tom Brady is the best of his generation. They all play under these rules, and he's dominated. But you go back a year, he set all the records. He's had all the success. He was, I think, 44 at the time, which is really old for a football player. For a quarterback, I don't know if it's unprecedented, but it's got to be up there. You do not, you know, it wasn't that long ago that 34 was like kind of long in the tooth for a quarterback. 44 was unheard of. So Tom Brady was literally at the peak of everything. And he retired. And he's going to go off into the sunset with his wife who loves him and his beautiful children. And he's got his whole life ahead of him. And like a month or two later, he unretires. And when he unretires, the family is not happy. At least the wife isn't, because she leaves him. And pretty instantly, divorce proceedings begin. And now they are divorced. So he stayed one more year and lost his marriage and lost the home that he shared with his family. He lost that stability for his children. All of that is gone. All of that is gone because he decided, I need to play one more year. And the reason I think this resonates with me so much is because I have messed up in my life multiple times in the opposite direction. Like, I have had two different occasions as an adult where I've been in a serious, committed relationship with somebody, and I sacrificed career or career opportunities to help them along. And then as soon as they had stable footing, they're gone, or I'm gone. These are people I was raising families with, people that I cared about, loved, but it always ended up being a mistake. My life experience has shown me, if you have a relationship with somebody and there's a financial or career matter that comes up and you have to prioritize one or the other, it sounds backwards. And clearly I haven't found the right people, but every time I chose to prioritize my partner over my profession and it came back to bite me in the ass every single time. So on some level, Brady's story resonates with me. And on some level, I think, I don't know, I don't want to get all Freudian here, but I think it strikes me that here's this person who, I haven't had success, not on the level he has, and I think even on a basic level. I couldn't do a podcast for a month because losing a microphone and having to hire an engineer to help me fix the problem was a major financial strain given where I am right now. So to see Tom Brady, who has made millions of tens of millions of hundreds of millions of dollars in his life, still struggle with the equation of how do I balance, you know, what I want to do and my family, how do I balance this? And he doesn't know. He made a mistake. I'm sure today Tom Brady's thinking, well, let me say, I don't know, because we don't know the marriage. You don't know a relationship between people. Maybe he's happier. Maybe there were other problems and that's why he wanted to go back. I don't know. I just think there's something humane about seeing another person who in some ways is just the exact polar opposite of you in every single way. He's basically my age. I'm 44. Brady's 45. I'm a part-time adjunct freelance writer podcaster. He's the greatest quarterback in NFL history. He was married to a supermodel. Nobody looks at me when I walk in the room. And Tom Brady's a very handsome dude too. His existence is completely unfathomable to me. And yet, this one specific aspect of it is extremely relatable. And it just breaks my heart if he's not happy. If he's happy, great. But the thought that he's in a room somewhere, his kids aren't there, you know, it's not about his ex-wife being a supermodel. It's about his ex-wife being someone that he was with for years. They had love. They had companionship. They had familiarity. They had history. All these things. And they're all gone. So he could go through some crap season with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I don't know. Again, that's going to be the title when I post this episode. It's going to be, I don't know. I promise you next week we'll have a guest and we'll talk more about things that we do know. So that's all for this episode. Thank you if you have stayed with it, not just today, but in general. I promise that as long as the microphone doesn't sabotage me again, there will be regular episodes. Please remember you can follow me on Twitter at Matthew E. Miranda. You can subscribe to our Patreon. You probably have if you're listening to this, honestly, but you have friends. Encourage them. They should subscribe. Think of all the things that your friends spend money on besides this show. You run into your friends in the afterlife and they're like, why didn't you tell me? I was wasting my life on booze and partying and vacation. I could have been listening and learning from the Jackman Sports Show. Yeah, they're right. So don't be an Ebenezer Scrooge. You be Jacob Marley. You set them straight when there's still time. Refer them to the Patreon, patreon.com/Jackman Sports Show. Again, you can follow us on Twitter at Jackman Sports. Email thoughts, questions, suggestions. Maybe you have some feedback about this episode. Maybe you just want to say hello, welcome back, or screw you for being gone so long, whatever you want to say. Maybe you have a thought about someone you would like to hear on the pod. Email jacobinsports@gmail.com. That is it for this episode. I am about to turn off the microphone, and I'm about to check and make sure that this episode actually recorded right now on my computer. The verdict is 50-50. And again, if this did not record, I loved you all. And I was born November 10th, 1978. And I am going to jump out this window on March 1st, 2023, if this did not record. Assuming it did record and I live, see you next week, everybody.